I was speaking tonight, I met quite a few 24 hours. I was up in his home group one night, quite a few 24 hours ago. Lady that the Anson Service chairman spoke of that night. And I've been around Sonny quite a few times here in Macon and also in the Atlanta area. So will you help me to welcome Sonny White from Rockmont, Georgia?
Thank you, everyone. My name is Sonny White, and I'm happy that I am a recovering alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and you wonderful people that I'm able to stand here tonight sober. And for that, I'm grateful. I can't tell you how I feel. I feel like I'm having a damn barn dance in my stomach right now, but... You know, I saw a cartoon once that said these two children were standing in a crib, and one was a little boy and the other was a little girl, and the little boy looked over at the little girl and said, you know, I'd like to get in your panties. And she said, why? He said, because mine are wet. Well, that's the way I am. I don't get nervous. My kidneys just tell me that, you know. I'm so nervous I'd probably try to pronounce the eye chart instead of read it. But you know, I'm so glad to be here, and it is an honor to be here. My home group is the Equal Time Group, which I think is the greatest group there is. And I have the honor to represent the 14th District as DCM, which I know is the best district in the state of Georgia without a doubt. And I'm proud of them. You know, I'm supposed to say tell how it was, what happened to us, and how it is now. And all I can tell you, it was hell. I found you people in the God of my understanding, and I still have problems, but I'm able to face them. It's better. This place here has a terrific meaning to me, Macon does. The first time I came here, I had been in the program from February the 9th until May. And I came with my sponsor. Another reason this place has a terrific meaning to me is where I took my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor. You know, there are things that happen to you when the lights are out. And you can bear your soul to someone that you have complete confidence in, and you know that it will never go any further. And he can share with you things that we could not talk about even with the lights on. I found that here in this Hilton. For that I'm grateful, and that's the reason I'm able to stand here sober tonight. I was born in Rockmont in 1928. I know I don't look that old. My mother died when I was 21 days old. I went to live with my grandmother when I was 7 days old. At that particular time, my daddy was not an alcoholic, but he became one. The reason I'm telling you that is the fact that I used to, at one time, I didn't understand. And today, I am so glad. I can truthfully say, as I stand before you, that I am glad that I am an alcoholic. Because I understand my father, although he is dead and gone now, more than I ever was able to before I became an alcoholic. For that I'm grateful. I love him more than I ever could love him had I not become an alcoholic. You know, it's hard to accept when someone tells you if it wasn't for you, he'd have a wife. Especially when you're a small child. But see, I understand now, and now I know that I'm grateful. When I went back, we went to my grandmother's when I was 7 days old. And like I said, mother died when I was 21 days old, and I had a grandmother and a mother all combined. I lived on a big farm. All my relatives lived next door. I had a lot of aunts and uncles that were like big brothers and sisters. And I had more mothers than anybody in the world, and they almost loved me to death. I had a good life. I had anything I wanted, and more than I needed, except the thing that we need more than anything in the world, and that's for somebody to put your, especially your father, to put your arms around you and tell you I love you. And I haven't got tired of that yet. I like for somebody to tell me they love me, because I like to tell people I love them, and I mean it. My dad was a workaholic and an alcoholic. When he wasn't working, he was drinking. And as we know now, and I didn't know then, this is a progressive disease, and he has progressed rapidly. Many nights we had to leave home. My dad was a weekend drunk, alcoholic. And many weekends we had to leave home, and at an early age I would hold to my granny's apron string or hand and slip through the woods and go to the neighbors and spend the night. And as time went on, it got to the point as I got bigger, she'd hold to my hand and we'd go through those woods. My daddy never gave me any physical abuse. He never laid the weight of his hand on me. But you know, verbal abuse is worse than any physical abuse has ever been. But you know, this program has helped me to understand him, and now I know I could never make amends to him for the thoughts that I had, but he knows how I feel now. My grandmother was so wonderful that she didn't want to see nothing in her bad in her pride and joy. And as I look back, I think so many times, the times that I said, I'll never drink. I'll never, never drink, because I don't want to be like that. But I did, and I became like that. I have a son now that's 10 years old. He and his mother used to have to leave the house because his daddy was doing like my daddy did. So I know. I've been on both sides of the fence. I started drinking, I think, I don't know exactly when. I know one thing. The first time I drank any alcohol, I got drunk. The last time I drank any, I got drunk. And there were a lot of times in between that I didn't, but there wasn't as many that I didn't as it was that I did. You know, that sort of sums it up. I drank at first because I thought it was smart. And then I drank because I began to like it. And I like what it did for me. And I like what it made me feel. And then I became addicted. And I drank because I had to. It's just that simple. I went through high school. I had an alcoholic personality from the word go. I was a con artist. I knew when to turn the tears on and when to turn them off. I knew how to tell the teachers when I didn't get my homework, being from a small town, everybody knew that my dad was an alcoholic, and I'd just tell them, I'd tell a lie, you know, right quick. I couldn't get my homework, you know how dad is, and we wasn't at home. That's all right, sonny, you can get it tomorrow, you know. I used my daddy so many different ways, and even after I became and was well on my way as practicing alcoholic, you know, I used to pray that he wouldn't come home drunk on Saturday or Friday night or whenever it was. He usually started, he worked till Saturday at noon, it'd always be Saturday night and Sunday, and he'd go back to work Monday. But as his disease progressed, it got to the point where it was Friday and Saturday, and then sometime weeks. Mine was the same way, only mine got to be months. I used to pray that he would come home drunk. You know, it's pretty hard to find out who has been drinking the most when you've got somebody else drunk in the house. He can't smell it on you, you know. So that, I used him. I used to steal money from him when he was drunk to buy my own liquor. When I was in high school, I worked my last 2 years in high school. I worked with men. I went to work at 3:30 in the morning, ran a house-to-house milk route. and then went to school. And the people I worked with drank. I drank like they did. When I got out of high school, my granddaddy had it fixed in a will so if I could go to college. I wasn't prepared to go to college because I wasn't even prepared to get out of high school. I went to pass and not to learn. I thought I was so small I couldn't participate in sports, so I wanted to excel in something, and I did. I could drink more liquor than anybody my size or age in that school at that particular time. So I went to college. I went up to North Georgia, and when I got up there, the first thing I found out is where do you get the beer and where do you get the liquor? Needless to say, I didn't do too well in my college education, my short term. I used to tell people that the reason I came home that I was in love and came home to get married, you know. And then I said I came home and Grandma fixed me a good meal and I found out I wasn't in love, I was just hungry. But what the problem was, you know, I wasn't making too good of grades and I did just like I had the same thing happen to me that I did so many times as life went on. If they're fixing to send you a fire, you quit. And leave, you know, that sounds better, or it did to me anyhow, you know. Well, I came back from school, and I went back to work in that dairy, and I worked till January of 51. No, I take that back. I went back. I worked till November of 50. I used to go to a lot of football games at that particular time. In 1950, Rock Martin had the state champion. I went to all the games. I didn't see many of them, but I went to them. I was in Valdosta one time, and as the half it kicked off, it's the first time I ever seen the whole offense kick off and the whole the receiving team catch him. And 11 footballs in the air at one time. That's hard to see, you know. I did. I didn't even know who won until we got back the next day, and somebody had to tell me. I'm not bragging about that, but see, I didn't know what was wrong. I thought that's the way everybody did when they got drunk. I took my physical in November 50, and they ran us through there like a bunch of cattle through an auction barn, and they told us who was passing and who didn't, and I found out that I was being accepted to go to fight for my country. And whatever greater reason is it to celebrate than when you're getting ready, prepared to go probably give your life for your country than to go get drunk. And I proceeded to get drunk. We caught the bus in Cedartown, which is 12 miles from Rock Martin. It took me, I got drunk in Atlanta after the physical. It took me 3 days to get 12 miles back home. I quit work immediately and didn't go into the service till January the 21st. I was drunk when I was sworn in. I stayed in 2 years. I was drunk when I got out, so the service didn't make me an alcoholic. During the time that I was in there, I had a very serious illness. So I know now that the God that I understand was looking at me then as he has been for the last many years. And I know now that he saved me and took care of me because he had something for me to do. And he had better things in store for me. And those better things are new people and being able to be sober. Because when I was in service, I had spinal meningitis. I stayed unconscious 19 days. They pulled a sheet over me at one time, and they said I was dead. They also said I'd never walk again, and the God of my understanding has let me walk many miles and enjoy many things. That I'm great. I came back out of the service. I went to work. You know, alcoholics are good workers. When they're physically able. Hell, you have to work like the devil to be able to drink like I like to. I went to work at Lockheed. I worked the first 2 years. The last year, I was just down there. I drank, I thought it was smart. I drank a pint, half a pint, rather, I believe, on the way to work every morning. That was after I thought that was big, you know, to be able to turn up a half a pint early of a morning and drink it on the way to work while everybody else in the station wagon gagged, you know. I thought that was big. And I always had two so I could drink the other one in the afternoon after it'd been laying on that seat in that hot July and August weather, you know, come out and take one and drink it. And then get that quart of beer and drink it on the way home. I said, set some kind of record for absenteeism down there. I didn't quit. I left, you know. I had better things down the road. The only reason I didn't quit, I didn't go back because they had me fired. I mean, you know, I quit. I got another job, and that's when I started these geographic cures. Now I'm ahead of myself. During all these years, I was drinking, and I wouldn't go home when I'd get drunk because I didn't want the one that I loved so much, my grandmother, to see me drunk. The word would get home occasionally, but you know, we only see in our loved ones the things that we want to see. And she didn't want to see me like that or even think of me that way. And 1 year from the day that I graduated, I went to another graduation exercise, and they hit it on a football field. And I had been drinking all day, and to top it all off, I ate a milkshake and went to the graduation and set up about six rows up. In June, and it is hot, and I had been drinking white whiskey and bonded liquor and all anything else I could get, and I didn't vomit on anybody. I just puked on about six rows falling down below. The word, that is, I bet I'm the only living person today has had a wake and wasn't dead. They carried me. They stopped the graduation exercise and literally carried me out while everybody was watching, I might add, and carried me to my cousin's house, and he immediately put me in a tub, and I hung my head over the commode, and I said I never drank again, and I puked. But anyhow, after this thing, I got back on the bed, and that was the first time the bed did the thing. I was laying there with nothing on but what God gave me. And the exercise was over, and I heard cars begin to pull up in front of my cousin's house, and so I pulled up a sheet, you know. And all these wonderful aunts and uncles that loved me so well came in, and there I lay. Nothing to say in defense for myself. I wasn't even able to talk. And all they said, they walked by, and I closed my eyes, you know. So I didn't fold my hands. And they said, we never thought he'd do it. What are we going to tell Mama? If they thought what they were going to tell Mama, I wonder what they thought I was thinking about. You know? Well, I tried to go to work the next day, and, you know, every time we set a quart of milk off, I'd puke a quart. I'm telling you, water would not stay down, and it was green as this coat. Only it was ropey, you know. Well, I worked a couple of hours, and I got off, and I told my cousin, I worked for him. I said, I just can't. And you know what? The remorse had set in. I was sick with what I was thinking about, what I was going to have to face. And I was physically sick, too. And I lay there till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and finally I got my life put together. And I went home. And I never will forget, I walked in and my grandma looked at me. Like I say, we lived on a farm and country people, you know, and grandma's looked at me and she said, Lord, son, you're going to have to start taking better care of yourself. You look like you slept with a dry kettle last night. Well, she didn't know how I felt, I'll tell you. I felt like I'd been run over by the dry kettle, you know. And I told her, I said, Grandma, I figured if I could beat them to the punch, I'd done this so many times. I said, Grandma, I've got something to tell you. And so I told my side of it, you know. I drank a little bit and I got sick. And I vomited on some people and I was sorry. And she said, son, said, you know, you've seen what it's done to your daddy and I was hoping you wouldn't have to do this. But every young man has to sow a few wild oats and maybe now you know and maybe you won't do it. I said, no, I won't. Well, I went in there and lay down on the bed and peace be still. The world had been lifted off of my shoulders, you know. That was it. That was the beginning of this thing, of you being able to shift this load of burden and remorse away from me. Because I wouldn't have been drinking if those other boys hadn't stopped and got it, you know. I brought that in too, of course. Well, I lay there in a few minutes. Here came the second wake. All those aunts had got off from work and they drove up And I was laying there smiling like a jackass eating briars. I thought, I'll beat you to this one. And they walked in, and I can still see my grandmother out there in that swinging. Or she might have been in the rocking chair rocking, I don't know. And they came in, there was three of them, bless their heart. And they got in the chair, and they rocked, and they talked about the weather, and they talked about this. And I said, it's coming in a minute, you know. Finally, one of them says, Mama, says, we got something to tell you, but we hate to. She says, well, now, if you're going to tell me about Sonny being drunk last night, I don't want to hear nothing about it. He's already told me all about it. I could have jumped up and shouted. I was ready to go to heaven right then. Everything was right. But like I say, see, those things were the things that I did. And every time I'd go out and get drunk and, pardon the expression, but make an ass of myself, and the word got home, she finally get around, son, somebody tells me that you were certain for a place, you did so and so. Boy, I'd turn on the tears. I said, here I am, a young man. I get out here trying to have fun just because daddy's a drunk. Everybody thinks I'm a drunk. Put the load on somebody else's back. That's what I did. When I got out of service, like I said, and I went to work for Lockheed. I stayed down there. I worked like hell. Most of the time because I was nervous. I said, did you ever get nervous? I heard a man say, can't you? Hell, I could thread a sewing machine that's running, you know. That don't make a difference. But I went to work for an outfit, and they sent me to Panama City. I stayed down there, and I drank a lot. The people I worked with, they were like me. They weren't. They hadn't been fired. They just moved on to better jobs, you know. I stayed there. No, I went to Charleston, South Carolina first, yeah. Well, I used to fall in love and get lost more than anybody in the world. Just like when I was in high school, I laid out and went to Atlanta to the YMCA one time. They said, what are you doing out of school? I said, well, we had a perfect attendance, so they let us give us a holiday to be out. You know, that was it. And so when I take time off from work, I said, I've been working so hard, the man gave me a day or two off. Anything, you don't make, you know, just tell a lie. Anything would be better than the truth, you know. My wife says I'm still that way sometimes. I worked in Charleston for a while. They shipped me down to Panama City. I drank a lot. I worked a lot. I drank more than I worked. I lost that job, and it was a continuation from then on. Steadily downhill. When it would get so bad, I would have to stop and regroup my forces. You know, when you get paper hanging, if you people don't know what paper hanging, that's bad damn chicks hanging around, you know. When you get those out, you borrowed from everybody you can borrow from. You've used up everybody that you can use. Then I could go back home to Grandma and Daddy. My daddy was a carpenter, and I'd go to work with him. I'd work long enough and stay straight long enough to get an automobile, which I had lost every time. And then those good people, and I'd stay dry and do some controlled drinking. Then I'd get a job. And I'd get out, and I'd stay straight for a while, and like all alcoholics that I've ever seen, practicing alcoholics, I couldn't stand prosperity. And then I'd be back on that merry-go-round again. I had that happen so many times. I worked one time, I've done a little bit of everything. One time I came back home, and my uncle was a city manager. And hell, he didn't have nothing else for me to do, and they had a job as dog catcher. So he gave me a job, and you know, being a good alcoholic like I was, you know, I told people I wasn't a dog catcher. Hell, I was a curator of the canines, you know. But you know, we eventually, after all these things happened over the years, my grandmother got old, and she had given me my daddy and I a home when we didn't have a place to stay. My aunt had lived with us at that time. And I never paid board. All I did was get from them. I never gave anything to anybody. All I wanted to do was be on the receiving end. Of course, I told them I loved them when I wanted something. Those times, finally, it got to the point after my aunt passed away that we had to get ladies to come and stay with my grandmother. And that was a hard thing to do because those ladies didn't like that loving son and grandson coming home drunk and showing it behind and talking all kind of ways. So eventually we had to give up that home. My grandmother had to break up housekeeping. I live within 100 yards or 200 yards of that house now, and I can still see her sitting on that porch rocking. I was raised in a big white house with a porch all the way around it, 9 rooms, porch on the front. A beautiful home, 465 acres of bottom land. I had horses, I had anything I wanted, as long as I started practicing. Became an alcoholic. But you know, my grandmother had to give that up, close that house, and move with one of her daughters. And there my daddy was a good carpenter. And by the way, I might add, that's what I do now, because between those drunks when I came home and had to work with him, I learned my trade. And my daddy and I moved out of that beautiful home into a four-room shack that had been used as a hay barn. We put black felt on the floor to keep the wind out and bought some cheap linoleum. We put sheetrock on the walls to keep the wind from coming in. No place to live because alcohol was taking it all away from us. I told people that house was so cold, when it got cold in the wintertime, the rats got out and went to the woods to keep them freezing. Just get drunk, get into bed, and turn that electric blanket on parboil and lay there till you come to again. In 1956, I think, let me see, I don't know, when I came out of service, you know, all these things, I got in the Legion, which is a good outfit, and I worked like a devil in that because, you know, I wanted to be commander because they sent you to these conventions, expense paid, you know, I like that. And I went to a lot of conventions, I drank a lot of liquor, I always had to take somebody with me, so when I got back, I report to the post and tell them what happened, you know, I didn't ever know what happened. I was in Miami one time, and I asked this guy in a bar. He said, "What do you want, Georgia boy?" I said, "Give me something I hadn't had to drink." He said, "Here's a glass of water." That's the only damn thing he ain't drank since you've been here. I tell you, though, you know, we laugh about these things, but they're pathetic. I was killing the ones that loved me, and I was killing myself. So in 66, all this thing went on. In 66, I went to my doctor, which I had been going quite often for my nerves, and he said, "Son, you're nipping too much." He pricked my finger, and whatever that was that came out, he didn't like the looks of it. So he told me that he knew of a place that might help me, and he told me, and I had to stay without a drink for 3 days before they would accept me. And I did. I walked a trench around the house with my aunts, trying to keep from going and get that drink. Because they sold white liquor 2 blocks down this way, and the bootlegger that sold red liquor was about a block up this way, and she was working, and I knew where she kept her money hid. And I would have stole it. See, I had run out of credit. I had run out of everything else. But I hung on for 3 days, and I went to this place, Victory Home, up at Cholula Falls. And I was up there a week. I hadn't had a drink for 3 days, and I was up there a week before I even knew where I was then. See, I was sort of pickled just a little bit. Well, when I came back from, I think I stayed up there 8 weeks. I don't forget what it was. During that time, I think I went to a couple of meetings. They might have read Humpty Dumpty or whatever. I didn't know. It didn't make any difference to me. I didn't have a problem. I was just messed up. I came back, and a friend of mine that's been in the program, Ike B., told me, he said, "Sonny, I think we've got a program that might help you." And where this was before I went up there or after I got back, I don't know, but I went to 2 meetings. I went to one in Rome and one in Carsville. And, you know, I still didn't hear what they said because I wasn't looking and I wasn't listening. I stopped drinking. I went back to church. I've been raised to go to Sunday school and church, and I like it. I went back to church. I started teaching Sunday school class. I taught some 10 and 11-year-old boys. And let me tell you something. I was sober for about a year. And then that compulsion drink came upon me, and I didn't know what to do because I hadn't went where I had been told to go. I didn't know what to fall back on. I was working with my dad, and that I wanted a drink so bad, and I came down off the house. Dad said, "Where are you going?" Well, I got down there, and he left me, and I went back up on the house, and I went back to work. But the next morning, about 10 o'clock, this thing hit me again, and I got down and got in the truck and left, and I went and drank. I went and got me 2 beers and drank them. That was all. I didn't get drunk. But if you're like me, an alcoholic, if you take that first drink, the if is the only thing that's gone. The only thing that remains in is when. So, it wasn't long before the when set in. I went to the pastor of the church and told him I couldn't teach those boys anymore, and he wanted to know why. I said, "Well, I started back to drinking." He wanted how much I drank. I said, "I drank 2 beers. Well, I want an excuse to get out from under because I knew what I was fixing to do. And I did it. So I drank on and on and on and on and on and on. I don't even like to talk about them. I think about them. It tells us not to close the, don't dwell on the past, but I don't close the door because I need to open that door good and wide quite often because I've become complacent and I don't want to go back. In 1978, things got so bad, I went to AA. I think I went to about 6 meetings, and one of the guys made me mad, and I went out and got drunk. And I found out now that was Band-Aid AA or Tourniquet AA, whichever way you want to call it. You know, when things get bad, you just go long enough to stop the bleeding. And then you get back out there. Somewhere along this line, my wife has told me, and I forgot, that I got married. I was drunk when I met my wife. I was drunk when we married, and I stayed drunk a long time. But I'll tell you one thing. It's through this program, and the grace of God, and a wonderful woman that stuck by me. And when I got ready, and when I hit my bottom, she was still there with me. And for the first 19 months in this program, that young lady went with me every Saturday night to the home group meeting without missing a meeting for 19 months. Without that, I could not have made it. When I married my wife, she knew I loved children very much. She also knew that she was unable to give me children. And I told her that there would be a way. You know, God gave us a child. We found out. We have a chosen son who is 10 years old. There again, see, I had to dry up because it was a necessity. I was forced to stop drinking because we got our son and then we had to wait a while before the adoption became final. And those people can tell you when you went to the bathroom last, friend. I was scared to death. I had never robbed anybody except with a pencil. I had never stole any money except from the people that didn't catch me. I had never lied to except everybody. You know, when you get so bad that when the bank that you have tried to outsmart and beat and everything else, and you get to the point that you don't even owe them anything, and they write you a letter and tell you you don't owe us nothing, they ain't all. We don't even want you in here anymore, you know. That's pretty tough. But when we got that boy, he was 9 months old, and I dried up. My wife had to quit work, so that's one reason I dried up, because she had been my support. She had been my enabler for so long, because all those years, the only time that I worked was to buy liquor and support my habit. I didn't contribute anything in the way of being a husband or having a home. When we got this child, whom I might add is the light of my life, I stopped drinking. And I went to work. And everybody said, this is what he needs. Because he loves children. He used to teach Sunday school. This is what he needs. That child is the reason he quit drinking. Hell, I'm afraid that man is coming around checking about us. It gets me when I drink. But, you know, after the adoption became final, things got better. My wife went back to work. And I told her I needed a new truck. And she said, darling, let's get one. We did. We got the truck. And things got better. And then I started drinking again. And, you know, I used to have... I wasn't a weekend drunk. I was a month's drunk. You know, these, you know, months. Days go into weeks go into days, and et cetera. The last time I got drunk, in August, and I stopped drinking in February. I wasn't out all the time, but I never was in. I didn't know what a blackout was. I thought a blackout was when you was passed out. You know, and you meet people and you say, how you doing? Hadn't seen you in a long time. They said, sonny, you was over the house last night. I said, was I drunk? No. You was drinking, but you was all right. You know, I thought I had it made when I was commander of that American Legion. I used to take them guys home, you know, and hold them up and carry them in. And these wives say, why can't you drink like Sonny? Boy, look at him. You know, I had this thing made. But they were getting up every day and going to work. And I wasn't, see? So I said, you know, my legs never did get too drunk, but my mind certainly did. I could do everything but remember where I'd been and what I'd said. I could drive, or either I had a car that was remote control one. I don't know which. I had old Chevrolet. I believe you could have pulled a bridle off it and hit it in the butt and it would have went home any time, I tell you. I was a coon hunter. You know, that's a good hobby for alcoholic. I had a lady one time. I dried up, you know, and got good again, started back to church, and bless her heart. I love her today. She said, Sonny, I'm so glad to see you. Said, I've been worried about you. Said, they tell me you take these dogs and go back in these mountains and stay for days. Said, how in the world do you do it? I said, well, I tell you what, when it comes night and it's real and it's dark, I find me a good place to build a fire. And I build a fire. I get up a lot of extra wood and I find me a rock cliff and I build a fire. And I lay down between the fire and the rock cliff. And I go to sleep. And when I wake, I get colder. And I wake up, I get up, put some more wood on the fire, take another drink, pull up another dog, and go back to sleep. You know, I thought that was smart. And she was concerned, and I was making a joke out of it. Now let me tell you what happened. I had a wreck one night, and I had this boy of mine, this son of ours, 6 years old, and I had been drinking those years. He was with me. A friend of mine was with me and had his little boy. And it was an accident. A lady passed me on the right, and I was turning. I failed to yield. She didn't either. But the policeman came in my hometown and checked that thing out. And I had been drunk so long that those people didn't know I was drunk because they'd never seen me sober. He was a young cop. You know, I had a friend of mine after I got sober said he'd been knowing me for 22 years. He never did realize that I stayed so drunk. It was so got drunk or stayed drunk until I got sober. 22 years. That night when I had that wreck, the policeman came and he looked and he told the lady, said, if I make a case, I'll have to make against both of you. You were passing on the wrong side and all this, et cetera, and I was scared to death. And I went home and that is when the bottle let me down. My friend that had enabled me to do and be what I wanted to be and do what I wanted to do, or at least I thought it did, at any time, stopped doing that. It would not take me away from this thing that had scared me to death. I would drink and drink and drink and drink, hoping to get out of it like I had so many times when I had done things that I wanted to get away from and use a bottle to escape. It would not let me escape. And I would come to, and look at the clock, and it would just barely be moving. It hadn't moved. I wanted to, you know. During these period of years, my wife, I could stand this hell raising when she called me these things and I called her those things. That I liked. But I'll tell you one thing I didn't like is when she'd come and stand by our bed with that baby. He would be wrapped, my arms wrapped around him, and look down at me, and the tears come down her eyes. And when she had done everything in the world that she knew to do, and look down at me and say, "Darling, please try to get a hold of yourself today. We need you. You're killing yourself, and I'm barely holding on. This child needs you." And I have laid there and prayed to the God that I know, that I knew then. "Dear God, please let me go to sleep and sleep all day so that I'll be sober when that wonderful woman comes home tonight. And sometime during the date, I'd have to have that drink." That was the way it was the night of the day that I had, the night I had the wreck. The next day I went to the hospital. See, I'd been in our local hospital many times. I would drink so long that I wouldn't eat. And I'd get where I couldn't go and check into the local hospital. They'd give me the glucose. They'd tie me down, doctor me up, and get me ready to go, stop me from being so nervous, and I'd get out of there, and I'd be in shape enough to pitch a good draw then. But this time, it wouldn't happen. They put me in the same room that I'd always been in, the drunk room, because they always have a couch in there so a member of the family can stay with you. You know, you might get up and leave in your skivvies like I tried to several times. My wife got where she wouldn't come up there, and I don't blame her. And I can still see her holding that child up and looking through that room at Daddy. But let me tell you what happened. I don't know whether this is the way it happened or the way I remember it. It doesn't make any difference. This is the way I remember it. I woke up, and it had always been that the room, the bed would always be in one corner. The lavatory with the mirror was over in the other, in the middle of the room. And they'd always have the bed level and have me strapped down. But this is the way I remember this. I came to, or woke up, or whatever you want to call it. The bed was elevated. The bed was in front of that mirror. And I looked in that mirror and I saw me for the first time. It wasn't a very pretty sight. Those eyes were sunk back in that skeleton head. That beard, I used to wear clothes till they'd stand alone. I'm telling you. You know, I'd always made deals with God, as I understood him. And I don't know whether I made a deal or attempted to make a deal or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. But this thing sticks out in my mind. I don't know whether this, you call this a deal or not. But I remember, this is the way I remember it. "God, you've always done your part. I'll try to do mine from now on." And I told my doctor I was ready to get out. He said, "Sonny, are you sure?" I said, "Yes." And I used to tell people, I went the following Saturday night. This was on Thursday, I think. I don't know. These things that I say are the best of my remembrance. I don't know. I used to tell people that I went to that was on Thursday, and I went to the meeting the following Saturday night and continued to go. My wife tells me later on that I skipped the Saturday. I wasn't even able to go because I don't even remember walking. When I left the hospital, I didn't even have a dime to call somebody to come get me. And I walked about four blocks and got a friend of mine to carry me home. But anyhow, that doesn't make any difference. But when we started, and before, when I went in 78, my wife asked me, "Can Jason and I go?" I said, "No, they don't have little children there. You don't need to go." But when she asked that night, I think I asked her to go with me to open meeting. And we went. And I went for the reason I was supposed to go. Because I had hit my bottom. And I knew you people had what I needed. That night I found the God of my understanding there. I think I had found him laying in that hospital. That night I found you people. That night I met a wonderful man who later became my sponsor. He's gone to the great meeting in the sky, Vic Mize. I could talk to him, and he would listen, and he would understand. He used to tell me, Sonny, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. And I say, why, Vic? He said, son, I've already done it for you. We started going to meetings. I still go to meetings. This program, there's no amount of money, even the national debt couldn't take care of this. There's no monetary amount that I could list. I can't even say numbers that high that this program is worth to me. It has given me a new life. You cannot buy that. It has given me peace. You cannot buy that. It has given me happiness. You cannot buy that. It has taught me how to love. I didn't know how. It has taught me how to be loved. I didn't know how. It has given me you people. I still go to as many meetings as I can. You know, we don't only get in this program to stay sober, but we become a useful citizen again. I don't know much about football, but I help coach those little boys. I don't know much about baseball, but I help coach those little boys. And you ought to see my ego go up when a mother comes up and puts her arms around me and tells me that I'm glad my son's on your team. When they didn't even want to pass me before. I can walk down the main street of my hometown and not hold my head down. I can hold it up. I can go to the church of my choice and not be ashamed. And if I choose not to go, I'm not ashamed because I don't go. Because I have a choice. I am a citizen. I am a member of a church that I love. I am a membership of a fellowship that has gave me a life. I am grateful that I'm an alcoholic. I have a disease that I, with your help, can do something about. I don't have to depend on a doctor's diagnosis. I don't have to depend on a doctor's prescription. I depend on the God of my understanding and you people to keep me sober. You know, I wish everybody in the world that has this program felt like I do. And you probably do in your way. But I wish everybody in the world that needed this program, and who am I to say who needs it, but I see some that have all the symptoms. I wish they had it. You know, the greatest thing that's ever happened to me is make a 12-step call. And I've never failed on one because I'm still sober. All I can carry is a message. I think the greatest thing that's ever happened to me is have a call and go. And you've heard me say this and you know that I love children. But the greatest thing to me, I love an alcoholic too, but you go to see the little children out in the yard when you get there and see them peep around the side of the house. Or the mother, or whatever the case might be, look. And you look in their face and you see that bewilderment, knowing not what to do, at the end of the road. And you go in and you talk to the alcoholic and he's at the end of the road. And by some way that you're able to say something through the help of God in this program that that person might use. And they say, yes, I'm ready and I want to go to a meeting. And to be able to go back and take that person to a meeting and to see life's light come back into that human being's eye, to see the shake leave, to see the worry leave, and to be able to drive up in that yard and see that child out playing with the neighbor's children and have them run up and say, Daddy, I'll be ready in a minute. or to drive up and see him sitting on the porch with that child in their arms, grabbing, rocking her, playing her out in the yard playing pitch with him. And to see that wife or that husband come to the door and kiss her spouse, because they know he'll be back sober because he's going to an AA meeting. To me, that's worth it all. Because that's what I live for. That's what you people gave me. I pulled up in the yard and saw that window, that curtain pulled back, and see that look of total despair. That worry, where is he, where is he? I wonder where he is. When's he coming home? And when you open the door, it turned into hate and despise and bewilderment. But yet they love you. I've heard that little boy say, "Daddy, don't drink that stuff. It makes you mean." And I've also said, "Daddy," I've heard this said, "Daddy, what time will you be back? Have a good meeting." I have a friend that works for me that has a problem. And I become short with him sometimes, and I did one time. And you know what my little boy said? He said, "Daddy, you hush. He's just like you." You know, I've carried him on 12-step call one time with me. He's 10 years old now. He knows what this program's all about. And this guy told me, of course, he's just like all of you alcoholics. You know, you're so alone. I drank alone a lot of time. And I had a funny way of drinking. I drank when I was with people, and I drank when I was alone. You know, I drank because I was rich. I drank because I was poor. I drank because I was happy. I drank because I was sad. It didn't make any difference. You name it, that's what I drank to, you know. But this guy told me, he said, "I'm so alone. That's the reason I drink." And I knew how he felt, and I could see it. My son put his arms around him and told him, says, "You never have to be alone again if you go to these meetings." And says, "You're not alone anytime because God is with you always." A friend of mine that was my temporary sponsor when I came into this program had a birthday. And I had only been in the program for a short while. And we had a roast, and we went to this meeting. And everybody was saying what they thought about the guy and congratulating him on this and that and the other. And at the end of the meeting, the guy that was chairing the meeting called up and said, "We've heard from everybody here. We'd like to hear from Jason." My son was 6 years old then. He pulled a chair up behind the podium, and he got up and he made some smart remark, like his dad always does. And then he got down to business. He told him he was thankful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he wanted to congratulate him on his fourth birthday and all this other stuff. And I want you to know he wasn't rehearsed on this either. But the main thing that he said that I'll never forget, he told him, "Bud, I want to congratulate you on your fourth birthday and for the wonderful program that you're working and trying to help other people and et cetera." He said, "But the main thing I want to thank you for is being here when my daddy needed you." I want to be there when somebody else needs me. Because I know you people are here when I need you. That's what this thing is all about. I still go to a lot of meetings. You know, rainy days used to be my drunk days. And I still get blue, and I like to go to rainy day. You know, you've noticed bad weather is when you have better attendance in AA. I think we all feel alike about this thing. Well, all I can say, this program has been good to me. You people have been good to me. You probably haven't got anything out of what I've said, but I've enjoyed talking to you. This program is my life. Without it, I'd be dead. If I hadn't found you, I'd have been dead a long time ago. And I don't want to go back. When I I left out one thing I won't even tell. All of us thought about suicide. I thought about that. I even had a guy to deliver a new suit to me to be buried in. He brought me new shoes, new shirt, new underwear, and all this paraphernalia, and I told him what I was going to do, and I'd already called the undertaker and made arrangements. I'd called the preacher, I'd called the lawyer, I'd called everybody, and this guy brought all his clothes over there, and I told him what I was going to do, and then talked him into selling them to me on credit. And I probably would have went through with it, but the only reason I didn't, I couldn't figure out how I could be dead and lay there and listen to these people say what a good guy I was when they filed by. If I'd ever figured that out, I wouldn't be standing here tonight. I used to get drunk and write a few little things that I thought were very brilliant. And I would call the lady that worked in the local fish wrapper there at home, and tell her, and bless her heart, she would print them, and I would read them, and I'd be ashamed of them. But since I have been sober through the grace of God and you wonderful people, I woke up one morning about 3 o'clock, and this thing was in my mind. And I got up and I wrote it down. And any time that I'm asked to come and share with you people, I always close with this. Come walk with me and hold my hand. You see, I'm just a weak, sick, scared little man. God working through you is helping me. That's what my golden triangle must always be. It'll never tarnish, nor you turn away. You'll help me stay sober day by day. God bless you. I love every one of you.